Welcome to my podcast, where I share true stories of survival, overcoming obstacles, and failure. These stories will inspire and motivate you, as well as provide you valuable wisdom and lessons learned to help you face the challenges of life, and most importantly, keep you in the fight. So it's been about a year since I really thought deeply about the Tahoe 200 and pulling out at mile 83. You know, thinking back to the events that led up to that, as with probably most failures, you don't think you're going to fail until you do. And so I'm going to walk you through the kind of preparation for the running race called the Tahoe 200. And he called it a running event, but it's more like an adventure as I see it. It's something I want to do for quite some time. And as you can imagine, it takes quite a bit of preparation. So here we go. The Tahoe 200. So June 20th, I believe it was. Thinking off the top of my head, but I had prepared for a 200-mile, four-day event, and I thought I'd prepared pretty well. In the year prior, I had built up quite a bit of mileage in running. I got a background in running, if you know my story, and I've been running for quite some time, and I felt pretty confident in that build-up. I'd done multiple days of back-to-back marathon days, 20-plus miles per day, every day, and felt pretty strong in the recovery, and did some pretty strong uphill training. I was following this vertical training program that I felt was really the backbone of how I was going to prepare for the Tahoe 200. Not only that, but you know, preparing for something that is going to last 4 days is not just the amount of work you got to put into the running and the base of that running over a long period of time, but you got to have equipment out there, right? Luckily, I'm an equipment geek, and I doom scroll all the way through YouTube to find the very best equipment. I typically can't find the thing that's going to work out the best. Everything from the watch that I'm wearing to the vest that I have on for the race, which carries all of your other stuff. There's required equipment that you got to bring along with you. And so the elevation gain for this race is pretty extreme. I think it's over 40,000 feet of elevation gain throughout the 200 miles. It goes around Lake Tahoe. And unfortunately, because of the fire previously, you couldn't do a full navigation of Lake Tahoe, which would be the 200 miles. It was an out and back course, which a lot of us were kind of bummed about, you know, going out and then coming back on the same trail you went out on. And anyway, back to the training and the setup. I listened to a lot of podcasts on those that had gone out and attempted 100-mile courses, 200-mile courses, that sort of thing, successful, unsuccessful, what lessons learned. So you're trying to glean as much wisdom as you can before you step out on an event like this. And I'd signed up the year previous to that. I had gotten in through the lottery and actually pretty confident about completing it. I had no real thoughts of what could go wrong, even though I was planning for different things of, you know, hydration and food and all that kind of stuff. Thankfully, my dad was out there to help out during the race, and that was pretty huge. Being able to meet me at different aid stations and checkpoints. But anyway, it continued to get off track. The training leading up to it, a lot of mileage you can imagine, but a lot of slow mileage, a lot of uphill training. That's what the vertical training that I was following. A lot of kind of just fast walking uphill. I started learning how to utilize poles, which was kind of wonky at first, but Wow, they're really, really important for this race. And out here in Maui, we have a 10,000-foot mountain. So, well, not a mountain, it's a volcano. So I was able to find different routes up to the top and through the volcano and come down the other side and different types of terrain and a lot of elevation gain and loss too. And so I was feeling like I was getting charged up and really ready for it. I was testing out my gear. I wore a Salomon a running vest that fit all my cold weather gear, my headlamp, my extra batteries, things like that. The watch that I decided to go with at the time because of the battery life was a Coros watch. A little bit spendy, but definitely well worth it for the battery life. And I didn't even have to charge it up during the race, matter of fact. And so I had that. I had for nutrition, I had aid bags at each of the aid stations along the way. Aid stations were spread between 15 and 20 miles apart. A little bit more frequent in the beginning and a little more frequent at the end, but for the most part, they're hours and hours apart. 18 to 20 miles are going to take you between 4 and 6 hours to cover. And so you need to be able to sustain yourself out there in between the aid stations, regardless of what you have waiting there. And the aid stations are pretty epic. So I wasn't too worried about the nutrition and hydration and things like that. I had a pretty high calorie hydration plan put together, as well as a lot of salt tablets. And as you can imagine, something like that, you're putting out quite a bit of effort over a short amount of time. And so you need to continue to fuel the body. And what else? Shoes. I had a couple different pairs of shoes, but the Ultra line is kind of what I wore. The Olympus is what I wore on race day. I love those shoes. I love the big toe box for my feet to fit into because my feet kind of spread out and they swell a little bit. So those were great. I wore the toe socks as well with a pair of socks over the top of the toe socks. Didn't have any problems with blisters and that sort of thing. I had a jacket. You're required to bring long pants, a jacket, a puffy jacket, and that all fits inside your running vest. And so, I mean, to fast forward a little bit, I kind of had all the gear ready. I had hat and gloves and change of clothes. In each of the aid stations, you can have a drop bag and have extras of everything. So within 4 to 6 hours, you could be able to reload all of your kit, change out batteries that had gone down, and that sort of thing. So headlamp was a big deal. I went with a Phoenix headlamp. Probably the best headlamp I've ever used in my life. Just amazing. And had no problems with gear whatsoever. I probably trained more on all the gear. When I say train, it's just figure out what works, what doesn't work, and what I like and what works for me. And I was dialed in on the gear. And I remember showing up to the start line, and there was people that looked like they had no gear. Like, you're actually going to start this race? You're literally wearing running shorts and a t-shirt all the way to full-on ice climber. So it looks like they had mountaineering gear on, and we're going to go camping for 2 weeks, pots and pans and stuff like that. So I don't know, there was a couple hundred of us at the start line. We had gotten to Tahoe a couple days ahead of time. And just to acclimate, run on the trails a little bit, spend time with my dad. That was great. We had a bear actually break into our Airbnb cabin before, like a day before we got there, but no big deal. It was a lot of fun. And I needed that time to kind of pack up all the drop bags and things like that and kind of go over the course and see where he was going to park and meet me during the race. There are certain spots where he could go and certain spots where he couldn't. And so that was kind of fun, just kind of prepping for that. Now, about a week before that, I was on vacation with my entire family in Oregon. And what do you know? People started catching COVID. And me being Superman, I kind of felt like, nope, I'm not going to get it. I'm super healthy. I'm ready to go. And when I left Oregon I don't know, about 5 days before the race, what do you know? I got sick, felt all terrible, and I didn't take a COVID test, but it was pretty obvious. Other people were catching it. My father-in-law caught it, probably gave it to me, and man, that zapped me. It was rough, but I had no intention of pulling out of the race or anything like that. It's just like, hey, I have enough time. There's like 5 days before the race. I got COVID right now. It sucks, but I don't really have to do much. The training's all done. Thinking back now, as I got into Tahoe and got prepared to do the race a couple days later, I did a couple training runs and definitely didn't feel 100%. I started to really get my energy back, but yeah, I was a little bit winded. Lake Tahoe, it does sit quite a bit higher than sea level. So maybe that was a factor. Maybe I felt that a little bit, but in the back of my mind, I was like, "Ah, you're not feeling as amazing as you normally would, especially with all the rest that you had and all the preparation coming into this." I was injury free. So I just kind of, I mean, what are you going to do? I just tried to take a bunch of vitamins and stay as healthy as I possibly can while I was preparing for the race. So I'm in Tahoe. There's about a day before the race. Dad and I drive through and go to the different aid stations at the different spots that he could meet me. I think one was a mile 30, a mile 50, or maybe the first one was mile 50. Anyway, we go check out all those places and the turnaround and just kind of hang out. I think we went fishing as well. That was a lot of fun. And so race day comes. We got to meet there at we get there at 6 a.m., get all the drop bags all set. And it was kind of anticlimactic. Like everybody was there. They've been preparing for a very long time. You could tell people were ready to go. They take your picture, you sign the waiver. There's a safety check. Hey, do you have all your gear? Let me see this. Let me see your lamp. It's pretty standard. And so ready to go. And kind of line up, say goodbye. And it was kind of like, Candace does her little speech. If you're familiar with that, just before the race, hey, if you're out there and you die, that's your own fault. Ready, go. And so we kicked off the race. And the race starts and it goes directly up a ski, kind of a little ski resort there, directly up the mountain. You're gaining elevation right away. So you're not starting with a run. I mean, people are trotting and hooting and hollering, but you're starting the first 5 or 6 miles, you're just winding through the mountains and you're going uphill, so you're pretty winded. And I got in with a group of people and just started talking story because yeah, you're kind of doing a fast trot at first, if not a fast walk. I mean, you're thinking in your mind like, hey, I got 4 days of this. Let's not go like we're in a 10K, all right? But yeah, you get in kind of with a group of people and you just talk story. Hey, where are you from? And I met all sorts. Some that this is like their 10th 200 miler, some that had failed every year for whatever reason. Over the course of the next day, I'd learned, and people had fallen out for gear issues, fallen out for sickness, stomach, injuries, ankles, knees, you name it, I ran into it. And it was pretty cool to kind of talk story with these people and from all over the world. And so the first checkpoint is really early on. I think it's like mile 10. You're just warming up. And so there's not much of a checkpoint there other than you do have an aid bag, which I grabbed a couple things out of there. I did take a gel from one of the aid stations, which I never do. I don't like gels. They're kind of disgusting. But I took one just because it was curious. It seemed like a cool flavor. It was disgusting. It was gross. But I got moving on. Next aid station, I think is mile 30 or 35. I forget. I don't have that map in front of me, but it's a number of hours away. And as you basically go up the mountain. Imagine you're Lakeside and Tahoe, you go up the mountain and you kind of hairpin turn after a few hours, and you come back slowly down to the water line, go back up and down. And it goes between 5,000-6,000 feet of elevation to 9,000 feet, back down to 6,000. So you're going up and down as you're moving around the lake, clockwise. And so, I took my first spill probably, I don't know, 2.5 hours in, cruising down, not paying attention. My toe grabbed a root and just did a full-on Superman, laid out with a group of runners I was with, and just tumbled pretty hard. Thankfully, I wasn't hurt. I got skin my knee pretty good, but for me, I'm injury prone on my ankles. I've twisted my ankles really bad, dislocated one of them. So the ligaments are just all stretched out over the years of running and the military and stuff like that. So, but that was all fine. Shook me up quite a bit. So I sat there for a minute and like, hey, all right, Justin, you need to slow down. You need to focus and watch where you're going. Because I was just kind of prancing along with everybody else. And yeah, just really not much to report on that first 30-mile segment. We kind of just settled into a pace and just started talking story with the group of people we were at. We kind of got lost a little bit. At one point, we're going up the mountain, and there's these little markers. If you've seen them in the forest, they're kind of like orange markers. And at one point, they just kind of disappeared. And we have the map on our phones, and so we knew where to go, but the markers weren't there, and they're kind of confidence markers. So you're cruising along, looking at your phone, then you see one of those confidence markers up there, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm on track. It's good, and it's kind of nice to see those, but they just disappeared completely for I think at least a couple hours of cruising up the trail, and the trail was pretty well defined. It's kind of like a mountain biking trail that we were cruising up. Well, some people got lost, and you can see everybody's kind of little pin mark where they're at on the map, and you can see some people going off track and trying to find themselves. And you don't get disqualified or anything, but you're just losing time, and you may not even know. You feel like you're on the right trail, but you're up in the mountains. You could easily get off trail. Anyway, unbeknownst to us, somebody had gone through, we don't know if it was a mountain biker or whatever, and pulled off a ton of those confidence markers throughout the trail. And how we knew that was we came upon this big pile of markers, and there they were. It's like somebody just grabbed them all and then put them in a big pile, almost like a pile of crap. Like, hey, here's all your crappy markers. I don't know why they would do that. It's kind of silly, but I know it threw some of the runners off pace. Luckily, I was in a group that we found our way, got back on the markers, got into the first aid station. Excuse me, not the first. This is the second aid station, and met up with my dad, feeling confident. Still daylight out. It's I don't know, 4 or 5 in the afternoon. A mile, mile 30, I think it was. Anyway, get in there. I change my socks. I'm feeling good. I grab a couple. The aid station is pretty epic. Grab a couple of quesadillas that they've made up, and just kind of hung out for a bit. And just felt good. No issues. This is not a big deal. Talk with my dad for a bit, and I said, "Hey, we're going to cruise off the mountain. It's going to take me quite a while to get to. I think mile 50 or mile 55." That's going to be a while. It's probably going to take upwards of 4, maybe just 6 hours at night to get to the next aid station. It'd probably be there around midnight or so. Maybe a little bit sooner, maybe a little bit later. Not a big deal. But I mean, I could call him if I was out there and tell him if I was early or late. But got my headlamp out and just trotted off. I saw one of the guys I was chatting with. He trotted off. And so I wanted to kind of link up with somebody. And off we went. Got dark, put on the headlamps and my partner's headlamp. I had the headlamp with the Phoenix headlamp, but also had the waist light, and that thing was amazing. The waist light is the way to go, and it just lights up everything in front of my toes because I'm real nervous about rolling my ankle. And so the headlight I just had as a backup to the waist light, and the waist light was my primary. And I put that thing on kind of a medium spread light, and it just, man, it's so cool because you can just focus down on where you're walking and watch out for, you know, sticks and logs in the road and stuff like that. Well, the guy I was cruising with, he had a waist light too, and he was super excited to show me, and it totally didn't work. The batteries weren't charged or whatever, and he was pretty pissed about that. And so he had my waist light to cruise with as we made it into the evening. Sun is set, and it got cold real quick. At the time, the temperatures had dropped into the low 40s, high 30s at night, and so I was prepared for that. And we're cruising along, so we're not shivering by any means. And it does. It takes a solid 6 hours to get to mile 55. I'm feeling a little bit beat up at that point. Definitely not 100%. And I try to just keep my mind from the week prior being sick and having COVID. What I did notice, though, is along the way, I wasn't keeping down food as much as I was drinking and water and electrolytes and taking salt pills and, you know, chewing on some of the food I had and different types of nutrition. It just was just like bogged down in my stomach. Probably had that feeling before where it's like it's just heavy in your stomach. And I'm like, ugh. You know, I gagged a little bit. And I'm trying to like, man, this is, I got to be, without nutrition, you're not going to do well in this race. And you're going to bonk. You got to get the nutrition in. And so it was kind of a concern for me. I threw up a couple times, but it wasn't like, oh, it was a big deal. I'm not sure what I was thinking at that point. I was thinking about it, but I was like, all right, let's press on. My first mistake, not sleeping at mile 50, because it charged up. You know what I mean? You're like, hey, I can just cruise through the night, get out there at 1 a.m., and I can get in the next aid station by morning time. And I did see a lot of people taking a lot of time at mile 50, and I was just like, hey, I'm just going to change my socks, ready to go, and get back out there. Well, yeah, that was a mistake. Got back out on the trail. It's like 1, 2 in the morning. And I just, oh, man, my battery just went to zero. And I just kind of like just curled up in a ball on the side of the trail in the middle of nowhere and just fell asleep, kind of like restless, kind of cold sleep. Because it was cold, you know, it's low 40s, high 30s. I don't have a lot on, but man, you're putting your body on the ground and curling up. And so it got really cold. And I remember hearing people like walk by me. And one of the individuals that probably, I think he slept for probably a couple hours at mile 50, he trotted by like whistling, like feeling like 100%. And I remember in my dream state, like, oh, boy, man, I made a mistake not sleeping. Anyway, got up, dusted myself off. I don't know, it's mile 60 or so. And at that point, I'm just like, whoa, I feel like just complete shit. I'm trying to drink some of the water that I have on me. It's not just water, but it's electrolytes and things like that. And I'm just not, it's just not going down. What are you going to do? You just move on. And so where's the next aid station? 50, 63, mile 63, 67, something like that. I just struggle bus into that. I feel like my battery is just slowly going to zero. I'm like, what is going on? My legs aren't working. I feel like people are just kind of skipping by me like it's mile one. And climb up this big long hill, and then for me, my kryptonite is downhill. And we're going down this power line that looks like impossibly long, like it's a 10 mile long power line. It wasn't, but you're just going down the super steep power line in the woods. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so miserable. And I just like stopped enjoying it. And I was like, what? Everything is going wrong at that point. And kind of was kicking myself. Did I train enough? Did I this? And yeah, in the back of my mind, I was like, well, yeah, you were sick a week ago with COVID and you're pretty wrecked. You know, what are you doing out here in this race? Suck it up, just keep going. So I just pressed on and I just went slow. I was just dragging my feet, trying to continue to suck down anything I could to keep my body going. And it just wasn't staying down. And so I kind of fell into the next aid station. They had pancakes there. It's like 9 or 10 in the morning the next day. And I just laid down in a heap and kind of had somewhat of sleep. Tried to shove down some pancakes. Those came up. I'm like, man, this is, I don't know how to recover from this. Like, I didn't bring pills that help my stomach digest food. What do I do? And I kind of just was there in my own misery. And then it was this weird, I felt like I was like holding everybody up. And I wasn't. I think I was probably in the middle, maybe in the back third of the group. I didn't really care at the time. I wasn't looking where I was, but it just felt that way. Like, man, I'm down. I'm at luck. I'm feeling like just hell. I knew I'd feel bad, but not like this. And I peeled myself off of the ground after being there probably an hour or so. And like, man, I gotta get going. This is, again, there's a mistake number two. I could have just stayed there for probably 5 or 6 hours before the cutoff. And I didn't really calculate that all into my plan. Like, hey, you should stop and rest. Mistake number two. Again, doing the same thing as one. Hey, just keep going. You know, stopping and resting is not good. I'm not sure why I was thinking that, but I just felt like I was just like a zombie, like stumbling off into the wilderness to get to the next aid station. And the next one was 20 miles away, 22 miles, something like that. It was, and I was like, shit. This is going to be a 6 hour slog, like maybe longer. I got to eat. I got to do something. And I just, you know, the feeling when you're sick, you don't want to eat anything, even though you haven't had anything for a long time. You're like, well, I should be hungry, but I'm not. I don't want to even look at food. I'm trying to sip on the hydration I have. It's just not, nothing's staying down. And I'm just, at that point, I'm like, in my mind, I'm just like downward spiraling. Nobody's around me to talk. Everybody that's going to pass me has passed me and not said anything because they're in their own season of pain, right? You're just kind of like, hey, what's up? Good race. All right, go. I was in no mood to talk to anybody because what is somebody going to do, right? Mistake number three at that point, I realized I had passed a couple of runners and they had pacers with them. And, you know, pretty challenging to ask somebody to come pace you. And, you know, I'm in Hawaii to fly out to Tahoe and do all that. But wow, what a huge benefit that would have been to have somebody that was just fresh, talk story, you know, get you remotivated or whatever, kick you in the ass, kind of figure out the situation you're in. You could run ideas. I could have been run ideas by them. What's going on in my stomach? Hey, I should. You know, maybe I take some Pepto-Bismol, maybe whatever. But I passed that and I always just remember so jealous. I'm like, oh my gosh, those guys are just, that's awesome. Because their pacer was like just skipping along, all happy, you know, coming up, just talking story. And I was like Mr. Scrooge as I walked by, like, ugh. And there I was for the next 5, 6 hours. And nothing much to report, but just misery and up and down the mountain to try to make it to the next aid station. And I had no plan. At that point, I had called a good friend of mine and said, man, I'm not keeping stuff down. About an hour or two before I got in the aid station, we were on the side of the mountain and it was like snowing sideways. And I'm moving so slow and the snow is just like going inside of my jacket and my hood. I couldn't like keep it out. I'm like, wow. And this is how people freeze to death up here. Like if you're lost or something, you wouldn't last long. And yeah, it is summertime, but you're at alpine level elevation, and this snowstorm came through for a good hour and a half and just pelted us with snow and a little bit of hail. And there's not much to say other than I somehow just dragged my way into aid station. I think it was mile 83, and I just looked like hell. I hadn't gotten any nutrition in my body. Well, I was able to put it down, but it just came up, and I was just like, man, like my whole vest was like full of food and full of electrolytes and that sort of thing. And I just, man, I was just at a loss. Like, I don't even know what to do. Like, this is so freaking terrible. I end up talking with one of the medics there at the aid station, and he's like, hey, listen, you didn't get any nutrition at the last aid station. Doesn't seem like you've gotten much now. This next section into it's another solid six and a half hours, and it's deep in there. We're not gonna, if something happens or whatever, you can't continue. We're not gonna come for you till the next day, right? It's deep in the mountains, and so why don't you just be smart about this and think about your options? And maybe that was the next mistake. I started listening to that, and my mind kind of got on that road of, and maybe it was the wisest decision to. That's where I pulled out. I mean, mile 83. Maybe I'm a little bit wiser in my older age than I was at my youth, but at a younger age, I've been like, shut up, that's quitting, that's stupid, you can't do that. Well, I think that was the right decision. Me continuing on without nutrition and going into I could have put, my whole family at risk. And so, I talked through it with the medic quite a bit, through it with my family, and it's just, hey, yes, you could continue on. Hey, you could sit down, try to readjust. Because I was well ahead of the cutoff time. So, but continuing on into the next section, it just wasn't the right thing and safe to do. And so at that point, I had to pull out of the race. And it just sucked. Like I said at the beginning of this talk, it's kind of like, well, you don't know what your limits are until you reach them. And I wasn't at my physical limit. The nutrition part got me. And I had run into a couple of other guys that had run other long, multi-day races, and nutrition had got them too. If it's not an injury, it's not nutrition. It's, you kind of have to get lucky in a certain way. And sometimes people get lucky right off the bat. Well, not me. That nutrition got me. And I think COVID the week before was a factor for sure. And so, yeah, I was just pissed and just bummed. And, it's a lot of training. It's a lot of sacrifice to do something like that. But the bright side, the next day was Father's Day. I was able to spend the day with my dad. We had a great breakfast and kind of slowly make our way out of there because, you kind of just, you're done and kind of collect your gear. We found a place to stay the night, and the next day we just drove out of there. And, looking back, it was a pretty good big goal of mine that it didn't happen. I still have it in the back of my mind, maybe, obviously not this year, but maybe in the next couple of years to go after it again and be able to accomplish that. But you got to have failure goals out there. And what I mean by failure goal is something that kind of raises the hair on the back of your neck, something that is exciting for you and you may fail at, because you'll push yourself even harder. Goals that are just super simple, not simple, but you're going to accomplish, don't stretch you. And that stretched me, beyond the nutrition stuff and and COVID and being sick. It definitely was hard. No doubt about it. If all those things were on point, maybe I would have made it to the finish line or or maybe I would have got injured. But I had a great time with my family and learned a lot from it. As hard as dropping in that race was, I'll be back. No doubt about it. Anyway, there's the Tahoe 200. If you have other questions for me, you can hit me up on Instagram. Anything about the equipment that I used, nutrition. I know I didn't name off everything. What worked, what didn't work, if you're planning on doing a race like that. Happy to share some of the insights in more detail. All right, that's it. See you.